Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show and welcome back from the holiday weekend. I hope everybody enjoyed and had some good family time. Some time with your friends, family, had some good turkey, and really just enjoyed football and whatever it is that you like to do over the weekend. And because you certainly missed nothing in the old markets. Okay, we had absolutely, basically zero action. And as you look back, and you know, it's always funny. We had the Fed last Monday deciding that they're going to have some kind of special secret handshake meeting of the jackasses, and nothing came out of that. We had, you know, a few more troubles in the old terrorist world. A couple things popped out, but again, you know, nothing of major ramifications, other than, of course, the Russian jet getting blown up out of Turkey. And, you know, there's some that say that that had to be planned and some that say that it was an accident. I don't know. You know, I don't know. That's above my pay grade. Certainly, there's always some issues and some tensions in those regions. So we don't know. But the markets themselves really just continued the old grind. We're going to continue to go higher. And I think the more interesting thing here is the battle, the internal battle that you're seeing between the bulls and the bears, you know, and I'm talking about the bulls and the bears of interest rates. I apologize. You've got a lot of reasons to believe that the Fed will indeed raise interest rates, or tighten, as they call it. And there's those that believe that they won't. I happen to be one that believes I'm kind of in the total minority. I believe they will not raise interest rates. I do believe the market will fail, but we still have that, what we call that Everett chase for yield playing out here, because there's just no place to go with your money. Now, you know, it's interesting. What's really being happening, what's really being forced upon everybody here, is if you want to be involved somewhere other than a bank account that pays no interest, or, you know, obviously minimal, or if you're in the EU, you have to pay them to hold your money. What you're really seeing is that the people have no place to invest their money. So they put it in the stock market. Now, you know, in normal times, that's fine. But we're now here at a 7-year run of the biggest bull market in history. I believe the longest in duration, and you know, obviously, certainly the biggest in point gain. I'm not 100% sure if it's the biggest in percentage gain, but I would think it might be. But at the end, you've got everybody who has money invested somewhere in the equity market. Now, that's all fine, except what happens when the buyers stop? What happens when the music stops and it's time to find your chair and there's no place to get out because there's nobody left to get you out? You know, true free markets are, there's buyers and sellers meet and they would do what they call price discovery. And who's going to discover price when everybody's fully invested and there isn't any place else to go? You know, typically, we don't look at it this way, but there's a competition for your money. Do I put it in the bond market? Do I put it in the bank? Do I put it in the stock market? Do I put it in another investment? And unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be any competition of where to put your money because you don't have a choice. It's either you make nothing and leave it in your mattress, or you try to put it in the stock market. Now, one of the things that pisses me off more than anything is that when you get some jackass who's supposed to be a smart guy, and I'm not going to name his name, but very well-known guy, comes on and say, well, you know, the stock market's yielding 2.5%, you know, based on its dividend. And I go, great, But what happens when that market doesn't go up? You know, so you're supposed to accept that your principal has been cut by 30%, but you're getting a 2.5% dividend or 3% dividend. I don't know when we became so cockeyed, so ridiculously ignorant when it comes to, you know, investments. You know, there investments and gambling. Now, again, I'm not comparing investing to gambling, but they both have risk. You know, there is no such thing as a sure thing. So why do the pundits and the so-called geniuses come out and tell us, well, you got to put your money here because you're getting this yield. But what if the market goes down? Will the market go up forever? Think about it. I mean, again, and I'm not predicting the top. Look, I've been short. I've been bearish. I don't deny the fact of where I stand. Okay. But I'm also a long-term investor and I get how it works. But are you really going to sit here and tell me that there is no risk to the market and we're just going to make that 2.5%? I mean, come on, that's really stupid. I mean, it's not even, I can't believe it comes out of some of the mouths of some of these people. But of course, remember, the people that I'm talking about are people that have to raise money to keep their business going because they got to make that 1%, 2%, or 3% off of you. And again, I'm not saying you should not use somebody like that. I'm just saying that you look at it and it goes, well, where's my risk? Because there's always risk. So the only place you don't have risk is in your pocket. And that's if you sew your pockets up and you're perfectly safe. Okay, because there's always some sort of risk when you're investing somewhere. You know, you can find all kinds of things to be invested in. But at the end of the day, we are well overloading the equity market. And we all know that things are not as rosy as they appear. We're coming through, you know, they're going to talk about how good Black Friday was. Well, I'm telling you, Black Friday sucked. How can I tell? I got about a zillion coupons over the weekend from different vendors looking to create more business. Well, if they were gangbusters, they wouldn't be cutting prices more. Okay. This is all you have to do to understand is look at the pricing model. If they're cutting prices, that means they're trying to sell more goods. Now, when does anybody remember then, you know, this deep of cutting on Black Friday? You know, as they get closer, they start to cut. As they try to clean inventory, we have sales. But, you know, and usually after Christmas is when the big stuff happens. And again, this has been a going trend because, you know, Black Friday, you know, after Christmas, next year's Black Friday. They're already building for next year's Black Friday. Now, I don't understand that. I get the Amazon and how big they are. And of course, I use them. They're very good. Okay. You know, where else can you go? One stop shopping, you get everything. But at the end of the day, retail sucks. We have a jobs number this week. I don't care what it says it is, it's going to suck. We've got a Federal Reserve of smart people, which I don't think they don't have very much common sense, but at the end of the day, that have never been out of the library, so they don't know how the real world works. And we're losing touch with reality because commodities at 17-year lows, retail sales have been lousy since 2011, no good jobs. So you tell me how your life is affected. That's what I want to know. Okay. I don't care what the numbers say because the numbers are all bullshit. Okay. I want to hear from you. You tell me how it's looking. But I'm so angry at what I hear and what I'm doing now, just so everybody knows, is I'm going to start to do my own little TV gig. Okay. That I'm going to do two short episodes a week, just my take of what's been said during a couple of days. And we're going to set that up on our own channel. And if you want to be part of the distribution, just shoot me an email at bubba@thebubbashow.org. And I'll just put you on the distribution. But again, we're just playing around. But again, I'm tired of the average guy getting taken advantage of. So let me know your thoughts. Reach out to me, but check out thebubbashow.org or bubbatrading.com. We're offering a new futures program, so we're hoping to show you some other good things. Anyways, this is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. We're going to step out of a break. We'll be right back. The Bubba Show.
Listen up. This is philosophical. Mud grips wide.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it's time for the one, the only, the superstar, Jane King, Lila Max Media, the Ka-Ching Report, and welcome back from the Thanksgiving break. Jane, what's going on?
Oh, thank you. Well, retail. First of all, we had a great Thanksgiving yesterday. We went to this place called Franz's Tavern. So if you're ever in New York, Todd, you should go there. It's a place where George Washington said farewell to his troops during the Revolutionary War. So it's cool. There's a museum there, and it's got this kind of, you know, kind of old America feel to it. Anyway, we had a good time, and Ron Howard, the movie director, was there. So we had a little star sighting on Thanksgiving as well.
Well, wherever you are, there's a star sighting. You're the star. Jane King. So Jane King, we hear retail. You said it yourself, and of course, I don't see it. I can't be convinced, but yet I hear supposed or so-called expert after expert tell me how great it is. Now, you, because of who you are and how many different markets you're in, what are you hearing from all of your different markets?
Well, I can tell you on the way in this morning, I did see Thanksgiving Day, I saw a lot of people line up at Best Buy, waiting for Best Buy to open. And then this morning on the way in, so remember, this is 2:45 a.m., we drive right by Macy's, and there's also the Manhattan Mall there where JCPenney's is. And it was bustling around there. The hot dog stands were open. There were lots of taxi cabs. There were groups of people just kind of milling around. Now, I don't know if they were buying, but there were certainly a lot of people out. Some early figures saying, you know, Amazon looks like to just really clean up here. Their Thanksgiving Day sales up 31% compared to last year. I think it's kind of what we've been seeing in the past is that, yeah, people want to buy. They have things they need, whether it's clothing or luggage or a new electronic device, but they're just looking for really good prices. So the question is, can retailers make any money with some of these deep discounts? Are they benefiting from people just coming in the store for that one product and then buying some other things? Well, it's a branding issue for them also, and it's extremely competitive. So, those are the questions, like the bottom line. What's the bottom line going to be for these retailers with all these big discounts?
And I think it's going to be no margin, no profit, and the same old story that we've had really the last few years. As much as we want to talk about the numbers, you know, when you're buying products, I mean, you know, the big thing I think this year is always the flat screen TV for $60. I give the first, 100 or whatever it is. There's no margin in there. I mean, I don't see it. Now, maybe I'm a negative Nelly or whatever you want to call me, but, you know, I don't see the great growth. I don't see what anybody's looking at. Again, maybe it's just me, but I can't see it. I don't have any great vibes that this is going to be a great season. I think it's going to be another year that we're going to try to say, well, you know, we're waiting and we've got this and we've got that. And of course, I think the markets themselves are still just waiting to see what the Federal Reserve is going to do. And I think that half the world is pricing in an increase and the other half is saying no. And I think that shows up in the strength in the dollar, the Fed funds rate, but then the equity markets continue to go higher, which indicates that they don't believe that the Fed is going to raise. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think most people, and you may be right, I know you've been saying no interest rate hike this year. That is a minority opinion. You may be right. And I think actually a lot of it, here we are. Okay, so it's late November. The Fed meets in mid-December. I think unless we just get some terrible economic news or another terrorist attack or something like that, I feel like the Fed, whether they want to or not, is going to have to raise just for their own credibility. They've had all their Yellen's had all our minions out there talking about it now for a month to try to prepare the market for it. And I think if they don't, that would be a surprise.
Well, you know, again, I just go back to very simple. I'm a very basic guy, right? I'm just one of these, you know, regular straight up. Now, we don't have a true price discovery in markets anymore. Everything is based on when should growth be based on whether or not the Fed raises rates, right? We've got commodities at a 17-year low. You know, those guys got to make money, and they're not making money right now, as you probably can attest to. So what?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Fed definitely is too involved in the stock market. They're watching it too much. I mean, that's, you know, not the way it's supposed to be. And you know, when you hear start hearing candidates like, you know, Rand Paul talking about how the Fed should at the very least have its power minimized, if not abolished altogether. I mean, it sort of makes sense because they are manipulating things by their action or lack of it.
And that's always my problem. Again, I have no problem. Free markets, you know, when you went out and got a job or when you're what you're doing right now, you're negotiating fees or services based on what the free market will give you. Is that not correct?
Sure. I mean, and what we charge is based on what a TV station can charge a sponsor. So, you know, there's this circular thing that all has to kind of fall into place, and everybody, ideally, will make money along the way.
And that the truly American way is that everybody's got to make money, and right now, the producers of goods are not making much money because of the low, the high level of deflation. I mean, you can't. It's hard to make money when you're selling something for virtually nothing. There isn't a lot of profit in there, and what that really means, doesn't it, is that if they're not making money, it means that there's going to be more layoffs, which means there's going to be less jobs, and that doesn't really bode very well for a long-term economy, in my opinion. What about yours?
No, I mean, and when the USDA just out with farm income. For this year, it's going to be around $55 billion. That's down 38% from last year. So $55 billion this year. 2013, it was a record high, $153 billion. Farm income down by two-thirds in the past 2 years. So there's your deflation right there.
And to me, again, we hear, in my opinion, illogical comparisons. You know, everybody's saying, well, you know, the low gas prices are going to creep more at the store. But I say that low gas prices help people pay their core bills. I think that people are having trouble paying their rent, their mortgage or car payment, and let alone, you know, buying their children clothes or feeding them or putting them in school.
Yeah, no, I think so, too. And we're seeing that. We're seeing people take the savings and they're paying down credit cards and maybe even saving a buck here or there, which we can certainly use in America. And I think that's why, you know, these retailers are feeling so much pressure to discount. Because of that, I mean, there's so many people that are living paycheck to paycheck, or they're, you know, putting something on a credit card, you know, just to get them through until that next paycheck comes through. So we're just financially out of whack, and not sure what you do to get it back without some pain involved, but I think that's how a lot of people survive these days.
Well, I mean, I think we have to have pain. I think that's the real story, is because we've tried to, you know, cover the wound that we have, you know, with a Band-Aid instead of the tourniquet that it actually needed. You know, eventually you have to feel the pain. But, you know, again, I still believe that the middle class has felt the pain all the way along. I don't believe that the middle class is really generated out of, you know, anything better. Now, again, in New York, nobody in New York realizes it because New York just is New York, and it was the first to recover, right? I mean, you know, New York is a bustling city, big money, and there's a lot of Wall Street there, so they keep spending money. But overall, if you go through the Midwest is in not very good shape. I mean, you're a Midwesterner. What are you hearing?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, manufacturing-based, and that's recovered somewhat since the recession, but still having a tough time. You know, when you look at the housing recoveries, the Midwest is kind of eh. I mean, they didn't take a big drop like we saw in Florida and Nevada and Phoenix and some of those areas, but they're not recovering really quickly either. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, when you look at the Midwest, I mean, it's cold. You know, there's, you know, job growth. They have to do more. And some states are doing a great job. I mean, Indiana, you know, is doing a great job of attracting businesses there. And, you know, I know Iowa is really making a big effort. But there's also a lot of hurdles. I mean, businesses will set up because universities are there. You know, so it's not just the jobs, but it's a whole culture. It's, you got to have kind of that cool restaurant, coffee house culture you're going to start getting young millennials to move to these cities. So the Midwest needs to do more of that. And I know they're trying. So hopefully it'll come around for them.
Well, I mean, listen, I'm hoping for everybody. I mean, I'm a big fan, right? I'm an American. I want it to be great for everybody. But, you know, again, I think when you have too much outside interference instead of letting markets trade freely, you end up with a problem. And you are, Jane King, the perfect example of the American dream. Well, right. You built it. You're building a great business. So, I mean,
I'm building a business. It's, you know, I'm working harder than I ever have. I'm more tired than I've ever been in my life, but it's also very rewarding.
And raising two kids. This is our friend Jane King, Lila Max Media, The Ka-Ching Report. You got to check her out because I'm telling you, wherever you're on locally, catch her on TV. Jane King, thank you so much. You're always awesome to have on.
Thanks, Fred.
That's our friend Jane King from Lila Max Media, The Ka-Ching Report. Always love to have her on because she just really lightens up my day, as miserable as I can be. But I'll be back after the break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back.
Margie's. Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Mike McClone. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz and all stuff with turkey. I couldn't even recover over the weekend, but I got my man, Mike McClone, ETF Securities, the Mr. We're going to call him. Here come the Hawks, the mighty Blackhawks. Oh, no, not the Blackhawks, but the Hawks. He's a Hawk. He thinks we're raising rates, and I'm saying we're still not raising them. What do you say, Michael? Happy Thanksgiving, brother.
Hey, Todd, thanks for having me back. Well, actually, I don't think I'm a hawk. I just think that's what Fed's going to do, and it'll be good to get it over with. I think it's going to end up being the wrong thing to do, but I still have this hope in my mind that it's the right thing to do, and it turns out to be that they're going to be right, and inflation is transitory, and it's going to pick up, and the economy is really taking off. That would be wonderful, but I just don't see it yet.
But the economy is not really taking off, and there's more worries and more problems, and as I said, I've already preset my menu at Junior Giorgetti's, waiting for that juicy steak I'm going to be pounding down, because I just know that they're not going to raise rates. And let me ask you a question. Last Monday, they had their secret handshake club meeting, the Fed. What was that all about? Do you have any idea?
Oh, no, not really. I don't get much out of that. There's not much I can comment on that one.
Their secret handshake jackass meeting where all the jackasses got together and decided they were going to have a meeting. God knows why they would even think about doing something for Thanksgiving. But we are seeing not a lot of great things, Michael. I want you to comment on the GDP. Again, they're calling it a good report, but I don't look at 2% as good growth. What do you think?
No, well, it's not. The good news was before we thought it was 1.5%, and it's come up to 2%. But that's one thing about GDP. These revisions actually will take years before they actually get it right on. The good news is positive, but overall, GDP is running around 2% for the country, and it has been that same way for 4 or 5 years now. That's a bit of an issue because, you know, at this stage in recovery, it should be running much stronger than what it is, and it's just not much of a case for that to create inflation, although what the Fed keeps telling us, it's going to get better, yet their forecasting has been quite too optimistic the last few years. It's basically been wrong, and that's why I come back to GDP is great, but I like to look at some of the forward-looking indicators, which like you look at the bond market. The stock market's a key forward-looking indicator, but I'm still a bit confused by that. And the key thing is, you know, and I keep pointing out, is I still, you know, I think two-thirds of the economy, most of us know, two-thirds of the economy is a consumer. So this really should be showing up. We should be getting an improvement in retail sales. And, you know, as I said, the last 12 months, retail sales is essentially running at 1.7%. You compare that to where we were 12 months ago, was running almost 4%. So that trend remains down and negative. And one thing that's come out lately is consumer confidence is bad. And I'm an optimistic person, but I'm a realist when it comes to being a research analyst, and I just don't see an improvement that would, you know, really benefit, an improvement that would really justify Fed tightening. Yes, the unemployment numbers are getting better, but they've got to get done with it. They feel like this has got to be over with. I think they're probably, you know, I understand that, let's get this over with. But, you know, let's put ourselves a year from now. If these trends that you and I have been pointing out do not improve markedly or don't shift, they have to completely shift, the Fed's going to be shifting back to easing.
Well, I'm telling you, I'm still betting on QE4. I cannot imagine. Look, I think the Fed should be disbanded. Honestly, I'm to the point where I'm fully in the opinion, my opinion only. This is not Mike McClone's opinion. This is Bubba's opinion, that they have no freaking clue of what's going on. They have no idea of what to do and how to get out. And all they're doing is creating a bigger mess. And the problem is, it's not only are they creating a mess, but Draghi is helping create a bigger mess. And to me, it's almost like it's all timed out, where they all do something at a different time so they can take a little bit, try to benefit from this. But the truth is, nobody's really benefiting. They're really just digging a deeper and deeper hole that God knows where we're going to end up from here, but only indicating that the depth of the next market collapse. And again, this is not a bullish or bearish opinion. This is a mathematical fact, what they're doing is they're creating a time bomb that one day will just explode and everybody's going to wonder what happened. You have any opinion, or do you not want to comment on that?
Oh, no, I definitely want to comment. My biggest issue with what the Fed has done was QE3. And we talked about this a little bit, and the best way to do this is compare this to other markets. So QE3 started in September of 2012, and the S&P was around 1,400. You can't deny that was a major force to make the stock market go up. And a good way to describe that is you look at the U.S. stock market and European stock market, like the Euro Stocks Index is like the number one, a key way to measure the European stock market. They didn't do QE. They actually started to tighten, and then the austerity. Now, we all know what they're doing now. They're easing. They're doing everything they can to help support the market, as Draghi says. Yet, so their stock market, the Euro Stocks Index, is 20% below that 2007 high. The U.S. stock market, because it was supported by QE3, now we haven't had this good, you haven't seen really strong earnings growth, or we did earlier, but now we're not seeing strong earnings growth. We haven't seen really good GDP growth, but the U.S. stock market is 30% above that old high. So that's, to me, that big divergence is what I lose sleep about, is markets never give you a free lunch. And to me, the biggest fear is that we're going to mean revert that. And that, to me, is where this whole decision period by the Fed will probably be one of the biggest things the Fed's ever going to do in history. Now, what they did for 2008-9, what I think was great, to save us in some ways, but they went too far with QE3. And now we have this problem of what do we do now? And that's one thing I've been really surprised about lately. The market, the stock market knows the QE3 is going to be taken away. It knows it's going to be tightening. The earnings have been declining, yet it keeps going higher. And that's been a major pressure factor on gold and silver, but I just don't get. And, you know, markets can remain irrational for quite a while. I definitely have to stay away from it, but it's quite impressive. It's still going up despite all these negative factors. And, you know, maybe you could help me there. Explain that one.
Well, when you give enough companies free money and you let them buy back their stock and you have mergers and acquisitions, it's hard not for it to go up. But I want you to take off your research hat for a minute, and I want you to put your American citizenship at work for a minute here, and just who you are. Now, if you look at the big picture, yes, the stock market has gone up a gazillion percent, and it's all been based on an air bubble, because it's the average middle class person has not really benefited because the average middle class person does not have that big a portion of their money in the stock market. So when you look and you say, okay, yeah, the companies are maybe doing great, but they're really not because their balance sheets are built on artificial money as well. What does Mike McClone, the person, not the analyst, what does Mike McClone, the person, see with the average middle class, which is the real drivers of any economy?
Well, that's a key, I think, a very good question. So if we talk about the average person, which I still consider myself part of the average person, our number one asset is our home. Most people own their homes. And most people have a mortgage. And, you know, the good news is the mortgage interest rates are low. But that's been a big problem is, you know, since 2006, the housing values, most people have homes that don't, down in price and haven't gone up. And this is one of the longest, it's almost been 10 years now where housing is lower than it was in the previous 10 years. That really hasn't happened since the Great Depression. And then, of course, some people have assets in equity markets. Now, there's a direct correlation, but I like to link this to what happened during the last big problem we had economic. It was 2007, 2008. And basically what happens is the housing market collapsed. The only reason it did that is because it went up too far. And now we have almost the exact opposite. So that brought down the entire economy, almost the global economy for at least a little while. Now we have almost the exact opposite. The stock market looks very much similar to what the housing market did back then. And that hurt most of us when it collapsed. And that's my biggest fear is the stock market is just going to do what the housing market did back in 2007 and 8 and mean revert. So from an average person standpoint, we're supposed to protect ourselves from this potential risk. And the good news is if it continues to go up, if the housing market continues to go up and then the Fed is right that they can start tightening and everything will be fine, the economy's going to expand, inflation's going to be pick up, we're all better off. And we're all going to do better. We'll all be able to get jobs as soon as we work hard. The problem is that's kind of more of a dream. That's what we need to, from an investment standpoint, protect ourselves against us. You know, and it's a little bit of insurance.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, again, I don't see it. You talk about some things and we're going to talk about them when we come back after the break. But I don't see anything. I don't see my personal view. Okay, and I'm not a negative guy. I mean, I get up every day and can't wait to go to work, and I can't wait to do something good. But my view of the overall picture is not very good because I just don't see it because I look and I see ridiculous arguments happening on a minimum wage debate. I see ISIS taking control. I see a president that doesn't do anything about it. I see so many problems in the economy and in the world that I don't understand where these guys are going to get off from and how it ever has a chance to end well. But Mike's going to come back and comment on all of this and more. But I do urge you to check out ETFsecurities.com because they have, in my opinion, the finest ETFs for the precious metal space, among others, but we love to talk about the precious metals, and because they are the hardest to really build on. And Michael talk about the backwardation, things that are going on in the gold market, which their ETFs also are able to account for, which most are not. So we're going to step out of here for a break. We're visiting with our friend, our supplier of my steak, which I won't eat for the next 4 weeks, waiting to get that delicious thing in my mouth on about the 17th or 18th of the month. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. I am with my man, my friend, Mike McClone, ex-trader, ex-Chicagoan. I'm now a big-time guy, big-time analyst for ETF Securities. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. It's Todd Bubba Horowitz with my friend, Mike McClone, ETF Securities. And you check out ETFsecurities.com to see what great products they offer. All right, Mr. McClone, here we go. We've got ISIS involved. We've got bombings. We've got a Russian jet goes down last week. We've got Putin taking over. We've got Obama sitting in the White House doing nothing, talking his thing. He had Assad come in and looking for help, and Obama did not help him. Lay it out for me as the average American, why would the markets continue higher throughout all of this information and why it's going to change?
Well, yes. Why it's going higher, I think a lot of that has to do with deleveraging and short positions coming off. Because overall, The main market that we really watch for measuring the U.S. stock market, the S&P 500, it's up about 3% on a total return basis because it does pay, you know, has dividends, and in 2015, which is great so far. But some of the underlying markets aren't doing anywhere. Like an equal weight index in an S&P 500, which generally outperforms in an up market, is not doing as well. The small caps, the IWM, is down. It's not doing as well. So the underlying market, in many ways, is not doing much better. So overall, I would say the market is not looking that healthy, but I'm still really I'm very impressed it's been able to recover like this. I don't know how much longer it's going to last, but to me, it's probably more likely short covering. As we know, when you take shorts out of a market, it makes the downside much more risky. But I like to look at the stock market has significant headwinds ahead of it. The Fed's tightening, and they're going to keep tightening until the market tells them not to. I didn't say that. Fed Governor Dudley said that. They've been pointing out excessive risk taking. The retail sales have been declining. PPI has been declining. CPI, the dollar index has been increasing. Dollar has been a lot stronger. That's bad for earnings. Earnings have been declining. So I don't see a really good, strong headwind for the stock market, but I see really significant, strong tailwinds for gold and precious metals. And one of these things is something that our listeners will probably never hear other than here, and that is the gold futures market is back in backwardation. And now I'm shocked by this. Now, backwardation means the front contract or the spot price and the spot contract in gold is actually higher than the futures. And that's really rare in gold because gold is basically, the futures curve is basically a complete reflection of short-term interest rates. And the best way to measure short-term interest rates is Eurodollar futures. Now, we all know the market's priced for Fed tightening. All these short-term interest rates have been going up as they anticipate almost a done deal. The Fed's going to be tightening at the next meeting in December. It's expected. It's done. And almost always the futures curve in gold would follow that, but it's doing the opposite. It's going down into backwardation, rather up into contango. That, or this situation, this extreme situation we're seeing right now in the gold futures, number one, there's a lot of shenanigans going on. You never know exactly, but it's overall, if you look at the big picture, it's a sign of significant demand in gold. Now, gold keeps going down. I know we're underwater. Silver keeps going down, but the signs of demand in this backwardation in gold, despite the fact that short-term interest rates are going higher, is almost unprecedented.
So, Mike, I know you're a bond trader. You were a trader on the floor. You became an analyst. But what do you make of this 17-year low in the Bloomberg Commodity Index?
Yeah, well, that's a key point. I'm glad you bring that up. For one thing, we're always supposed to do, as far as you and I being ex-traders, is always analyze what are the markets telling us. And that, to me, the Bloomberg Commodity Index right now is priced for a pretty significant global slowdown, if not recession. Now, most people claim it's excess supply. Of course, there's always supply, but there's two sides of the equation. There's demand. China's a key factor. China is probably going to a much more significant slowdown than the rest of the world expected. And also, the U.S. dollar index is a factor. And this is part of the law of unintended consequences. The strength in the U.S. dollar, partly in the back of Fed tightening expectations, they haven't tightened yet, while the rest of the world's easing. So first of all, I think that is an indication. This is the fifth year down in a row that the markets are pricing for a pretty significant global economic slowdown. Now, hopefully they'll be wrong. And if we don't get that, then commodities are probably an extreme oversold buy indication. Also, part of that's the U.S. dollar. The U.S. dollar might just top out the day the Fed tightens. It's already gone so far, so far, so fast. It's got all this tightening price in. So partly as a trader, I see it as an opportunity to buy. Some people have already. That's been kind of tough. It depends on what you buy. You and I both look at gold and silver as attractive. And also, it's what it means. What's an indication is, and I don't think we're going to get a massive global slowdown like 2008, but we might get something like that. And if we do, it's already priced for it. If we get something only moderate, then the markets have a lot of room in terms of commodities to mean revert. And that's why I see gold and silver as the most attractive.
All right. So Friday coming up is the jobs report. And this will be the last, I guess, major piece of data for our friends at the Federal Reserve. And, of course, you and I are on totally opposite sides of this market right now. And what will it take? What kind of number will it take for to almost guarantee a Fed rate rise or tightening? And what number would it take for them to, well, maybe we won't tighten. What do you think?
Well, I think for them not to tighten, you're going to have to see a much weaker than expected number. It's expected about 200,000 non-farm payrolls and significant revisions down in the previous data. Now, we did see that when September printed, but it came back. So it needs to be really, really, really bad. Unemployment rate needs to spike higher. So to me, it's going to take something that's almost very unlikely to change the Fed's mind. And I think the only thing that can really change the Fed's mind to tighten at the December meeting is what happened in August. The stock market's got to really go down a lot, and it hasn't. And that's one thing that's been very impressive. The stock market right now is telling the Fed, go ahead. We double dog dare you. We don't care. We're fine. Go ahead. Keep tightening. Start tightening and tighten as much as you want, because we're just keep going up, and that's what the Fed's going to do. I'm pretty sure, unfortunately, I think they're going to just be trading the stock market. They'll tighten until the stock market tells them not to.
Okay. So now, I believe that tightening, I mean, look, I don't think they're going to tighten, but I believe that tightening is actually the best thing for the economy, even if the stock market sells off, because with the lower rates, you've really cut out the middle class because you've cut off the borrowing power. Okay. So you can have cheap rates, but if you can't get the money, it doesn't really matter, right? So in your opinion, is tightening healthy for the middle class over time, or am I wrong?
Well, I think you're right in the right environment. Tightening is wonderful if it means they're tightening because they're trying to repress inflation in a demand pull environment that's creating inflation. The problem is they think that's coming, and they're betting that it's coming. And even though almost all those demand pull indicators, with the exception of these unemployment indicators, are showing the opposite, that it's still trending down. The rest of the world is trending down in terms of deflation and deflating in slower economies. The Fed's betting that it's transitory and they'll do better. And that, to me, is one of the most significant bets they've ever taken. They did try that during the Depression, and it failed. But tightening in an environment where everything's expanding and economy's doing better and they're trying to repress inflation, that's wonderful. That's the best thing for everybody. And we saw a lot of that in the past, in the 80s and the 90s, but this is not that period. This is, we're following a pretty significant correction. The rest of the world is having problems with deflation. And, you know, that's why I'd be wonderful if the Fed's right on this. And we might find out within a few months after the first tightening, well, how the markets are going to react. And if the stock market is doing fine and continuing to go up, and retail sales aren't picking up, the market's going to say, oh, the Fed was right. But, you know, we need to see those kind of things. Those are pretty significant developments. And hopefully the Fed's going to be right in this. I still think the biggest risk is we'll be wrong.
Okay. Well, now, I'm going to say that the Fed has never been right, in my opinion. Okay. In your opinion, you've got about 45 seconds. Is there a need for the Federal Reserve in its current setup, the way it's set up?
A need to do to change something, or what?
Is there a need to have a Federal Reserve in its current structure? Because I think
I think so. I think I definitely think we do need a central bank. I think what they did during the crisis in 2007-08 was historic and heroic. It's what we really needed. They just went too far.
Okay. Well, again, I'll tell you what. I wish they never had got involved in 2007-08. I think that if they had done nothing, we'd be in recovery already. We would have gone through a very tough period then, instead of stretching out the tough period and helping the entitled and the rich and screwing the middle class. It's just my opinion. But Mike McClellan in ETF Securities, we still like gold. Unfortunately, we're getting drubbed here, but we still like it. Silver's still your favorite?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, silver's just so cheap. And the import demand lately from China and India is off the charts and is very strong. Demand from coins. Actually, U.S. Mint has to suspend that sale of coins because they ran out of coins. It's off the chart demands.
We got off the chart demands. We got a big wager here. Gene and Giorgetti's. I haven't been there for so long. I can't wait to go back. Mike McClellan, as always, thank you so much for being part of the show. You always bring light, and we always got something good to argue about, because in this particular market, we're on the opposite sides. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
This has been my man, my friend, Mike McClellan, ETF Securities. And again, I urge you to check out ETFSecurities.com. They've got great products, and you heard Mike talk a little bit about continuum backwardation, and that is important, especially when you're getting involved with ETFs, because they have to know how to deal with them, and they do. This has been the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here same time tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much. We'll see you later. Put some feel good
in my soul. Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk Event.